Ladies and gentlemen, if we could start this thing, I apologize again. The newspaper had said it started at 6, but the legal notice was 6:30. Apologize for the confusion. We're required to rate. Anyway, we're calling this to order. My name's Phil Eisenberg. I'm the chair of the Delta Stewardship Council. We have four members of the council here tonight, including myself. Let me introduce them. The lady sitting up here is Gloria Gray. She is an appointee of the Speaker of the Assembly, so therefore the State Assembly, which has one appointment to this area. She is the chair of the West Basin Water District down south. Many of you probably know from Sacramento County Supervisor Don Natoli, who represents a considerable slug of the Delta area, lives down in Galt, which is a lick and a split just outside the boundaries of the Delta, but he represents within Sacramento County the Delta area. Wandering back to her seat, but coming back up, is Felicia Marcus, lady in the lady with the ponytail right there. Felicia is the West Coast Director of the Natural Resources Defense Council. I'm Phil Eisenberg. I am former mayor of Sacramento, former state legislator, and other things, and now doing this full-time. Other members are all part-time on the Delta Stewardship Council. A couple of things, and then we're going to turn this over to Executive Director Keith Coolidge, but I just wanted to make a couple points. Suggestions, if you did... Hi, Jane. If you didn't pick them up, there are two documents I'd urge you to look at. Little folder in the back, most people look at it and they say, oh, looks boring. This is the law the legislature passed in 2009, the governor signed, the governance portion. It's the reason we're here. It's the legal mandates imposed on us. It's the restrictions. We constantly refer to it. And I'd recommend you pick up a copy for reference. Right up in the front, there's a little an index of important terms. It's worth looking at. The second is this 8.5 by 11 thing called up at the top, notice of preparation. And this is the start of an environmental review process with this document that brought us here this evening. So let me just do shorthand. The legislature has failed since really 1960 to be able to do big water deals in California, occasional bond issue, but nothing big. The last time something big was successfully adopted was the passage of the State Water Project by the voters of California in 1960. There was in 1982 the fight over the peripheral canal and the referenda. But basically there's been a deadlock for almost 50 years. And I must confess to my surprise and to the surprise of a lot of people, the legislature and Governor Schwarzenegger took a break and changed that and passed a bill package, including this legislation, composed of five bills that are mentioned in the front. The bill that concerns us is the governance package, but there's water conservation, there's groundwater measurement, there is water rights tinkering, and there's a bond issue which has been put off for a vote until 2012. All of those together were the astonishingly successful in terms of passing something big, all deeply controversial. No surprise to any of you that water is controversial, always has been, always will be in California. The legislation did a bunch of things, but two things are important, most important. Legislature defined for state policy what they call co-equal goals. And if you pick up this little volume and go to it, Keith's going to talk about it too, but if you go to page 23, I want to read it to you because this was pretty dramatic and very, very difficult to achieve. It says as follows, the co-equal goals mean the two goals of providing a more reliable water supply for California and protecting, restoring, and enhancing the Delta ecosystem. The co-equal goals shall be achieved in a manner that protects and enhances the unique cultural, recreational, natural resource, and agricultural values of the Delta as an evolving place. And as all of you know, the Delta is that interconnection where the Sacramento River and what's left of the San Joaquin River and the other streams and tributaries meets, which historically flowed through a wetland area into the San Francisco Bay, out to the ocean. One other thing. The legislature also said there were 8 objectives that we had to include in the Delta Plan. And these appear under objectives in your table of contents, but page 20. And these are really the guidelines the legislature gave to us on preparing a Delta Plan and the environmental report that goes with it. Here's what the document is. The Delta Plan will be a legally enforceable state regulation. Under law, with the advice of the Attorney General, we started the environmental process because that is a necessary condition to protect against litigation for a regulation, very commonly done. At the end of the process, we are required, the statute says, we shall prepare, adopt, and commence enforcing or implementing the Delta Plan no later than January 1st, 2012. The statute set up a system where state agencies and some local agencies have to act in conformity with the plan. Yes, there's some exemptions from that. You'll hear a little bit about that tonight. But that makes everybody wake up and pay attention. So, legally enforceable Delta Plan, required environmental review process, and complicated things that lead us here tonight. This is what's called a scoping session, which is a funny word, but it comes from California Environmental Quality Act, and it's a process, it's really a listening process for us. So although there is a majority of the council here, we're not going to act tonight, we're going to hopefully listen tonight, and get your comments, suggestions, observations. Hopefully some of it will be focused on the notice of preparation, but we know from the other 6 meetings we've done statewide already that there'll be comments in general about water and policy and environment and so on. So I'd like to welcome you to be here and make some procedural notations. There's a court reporter sitting over there, not because this is a court hearing, but because it's a legal process, and the usual requirement is you prepare a transcript of the record in the event you need it. We are also tape recording this event, and the tape recording is to post on our website within 24 hours, so anybody in the world can listen and benefit from whatever comments you make and whatever discussion happens here. There's some blue slips of paper floating around. A number of you filled them out. It's kind of a request to address the council. The reason we ask you to do this is because the poor court reporter sits there and tries to figure out how to spell people's names. And, you know, believe it or not, it's not always easy. So we ask you, when you do use the mic, just, you know, give your name, spell it if you think it's going to be complicated. And then if you fill out one of these forms for us, we would appreciate it a great deal. Then the last thing is, sitting over there is our sound man, who became famous last night by an article in the Stockton Record this morning. It was delicious. There were 100 people down in Stockton. Just the fog was as thick as pea soup. It was, you know, it was one car length of vision, but they all showed up. And we had 21 speakers, I think it was. It went on for a couple of hours. And at the end, I'm doing my routine about, all right, now, anyone else want to talk? And I'm doing the calling once, calling twice, and a voice comes from over there. Well, it's our friend right over there who announces, surprisingly, says, well, this is my paraphrase here. He says, I'm from Southern California, but gosh, I didn't know all these things were going on. You ought to send people down to South to tell us. Well, the crowd goes nuts. They give him a standing applause. That was the end of the meeting, and that was, frankly, the highlight of all of the events, all 6 we've done statewide, all spontaneous. So, who knows what he's going to do tonight? I have no idea. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to start, and Keith Coolidge, the Deputy Director of the Council, is going to walk you through some process and explain what happens between now and the end of this year when we adopt the Delta Plan.
It's my job tonight to be the boring bureaucrat and go through the PowerPoint presentation, but to give you a little background on why we're here, what's really involved in a scoping session, what kind of comments we're looking for. And then because this is both a scoping session and a meeting of the Delta Stewardship Council, there are two sections on the agenda for comments. Scoping, part of the formal process pertaining to development of the Delta Plan. If you have comments that you want to convey to the council about anything outside scoping, what the council should be doing in other areas, what else we should be doing in the state of California, that'll be a separate portion of the agenda for that. So those are comments that are not on the agenda. Chair Eisenberg talked about who's here tonight from the council. In the very back of the room, in the blue suit, is Eric Alvarez. He's the public information officer for the council. And Gwen Buchholz, unfortunately, could not be here tonight. She's actually trapped in her office writing the first draft of the Delta Plan, which is due for our internal review tomorrow. So she's pulling an all-nighter, and I excused her from coming up here tonight. Scoping meeting objectives, we're really looking for my job and the chair's job at first is to sort of set the stage, what the mandate for the Delta Plan is, why we're doing what we're doing, and then to listen to you, to look to you to provide advice on is what we're talking about broad enough? Are there things that we should be paying attention to? Often when you get into scoping and you sit and write an engineering or a planning document, you think you know most of the issues, but until you go out and talk with the community, you don't know everything that you have to address. And so that's what we're really looking for you all tonight, to help give us some input. Are we hitting the right things? Read the notice of preparation. That sort of covers the broad range of what we think we have to do. And then make sure, if you think we're missing something, or you think we're paying attention to something that maybe we shouldn't, or somehow there's a nuance that we have it wrong, make sure we know that. Okay, we're going to go over that. That's a good point. That was tonight's agenda. The chair talked about the legislation, the Delta Reform Act, the culmination of many, many years of arguing and fighting over Delta-related issues. The Delta has been a changing and evolving place since it first developed. But man has been changing it at least since mid-1800s with passage of the Swamp and Overflow Act, which was the government's attempt to encourage development, reclamation of swampland. We got busy building levees and draining islands and creating usable farmland, putting the Delta to what we felt at the time was good productive uses. And in the process, we destroyed an awful lot of the state's wetlands. We got into hydraulic mining, we sent a lot of silt down rivers, we had lots of flood issues to deal with, so we started straightening channels, dredging the channels through the Delta, trying to get floodwaters out to sea, and in the process we destroyed a great deal of the state's riparian habitat. Later on, we looked at the Delta as the perfect place to locate a pumping plant to take water from reservoirs in the north and transfer it to uses in the Central Valley, Bay Area, and the South. And we located our pumps at the very end, sort of a cul-de-sac, in one of the world's greatest estuaries, something we would probably not do today. And since then, we are dealing with urbanization, both upstream of the Delta and the tributaries. We're dealing with a lot of issues of runoff into the Delta, of pollutants and contaminants that weren't imagined only a few years ago, and certainly not to the degree that we're getting them today. We're dealing with a lot of non-native species in the Delta. So there are a lot of things that have changed and affected the Delta over time. The culmination of all of our earlier efforts came into play in passage of the Delta Reform Act and the need for the Delta Plan and the co-equal goals. Easily said, very hard to do, to balance water supply, ecosystem, and to do it in a way that protects and preserves the unique characteristics of the Delta. You'll see in the notice of preparation, we have a map that shows the planning area. And that's because you can't really study the Delta. You can't develop a plan for the Delta in isolation from either its tributaries or the folks who use water that is exported from the Delta. And so you'll see that the planning area goes all the way up into the north part of the state. It is the Delta's watershed. And it goes all the way down to the Mexican border because water from the Delta is used that far south. To do a comprehensive plan, to do a plan that will work, you can't just deal with the Delta in isolation. You have to look at issues that are going on upstream and downstream. That's why the planning area is so broad. And then the Delta Reform Act said we have 8 objectives that they spelled out that our plan needs to address. And I'm actually going to take a moment just to talk through those, because those are really what is going to drive the organization and development of the plan. And when we look at the range of solutions, the range of alternatives, they're all going to need to be rooted in the 8 objectives that the legislature gave us. One is to manage the Delta's water and environmental resources and the water resources of the state over the long term. The long term meaning till 2100. That's the scope of the plan that the legislature said. So that's basically an 88-year plan. The council may choose to phase that so that we look at an evolving set of regulations in the Delta, an evolving set of solutions that build on each other. That will be their decision as we move forward. The second is to protect and enhance the unique cultural, recreational, agricultural values of the California Delta as an evolving place. How do we do that? Restore the Delta ecosystem, including its fisheries and wildlife, as the heart of a healthy estuary and wetland ecosystem. Number 4 was to promote statewide water conservation, water use efficiency, and sustainable water use. A lot of folks have said, well, you can't solve the Delta unless we are really efficient in the water that we use, both upstream, downstream, and throughout the state of California. So that is one of the key objectives. Number 5 was to improve water quality to protect human health and environment, consistent with achieving water quality objectives in the Delta. Improve the water conveyance system and expand statewide water storage. Again, solutions need to be in a comprehensive package. You can't pick any one particular favorite of yours and expect that that will solve everything. It has to interrelate. Reduce risks to people, property, and state interests in the Delta by effective emergency preparedness, appropriate land uses, and investments in flood protection. The Delta is inherently flood prone, and yet it is both a transportation utility hub. It is several water systems crisscross it or pull water out of it. And number 8 is to establish a governance structure with the authority, responsibility, accountability, scientific support, and that's a key, and adequate and secure funding to achieve those objectives. That is the wide range of the Delta plan that is going to be evolving itself over the next 7 or 8, 9 months. This is the 7th scoping session that we've had in the last 2 weeks, from Southern California up through Merced over to the Bay Area. We had a meeting on Monday in the state capitol. Lots of paid lobbyists and very few comments there. We were in Clarksburg that night, Stockton last night in the fog, and tonight in Chico. So we can't cover all of the state. But we have tried to be as broad and as representative as possible in the meetings that we do. but we are also heavily driven by receiving comments electronically, by email, by snail mail, by picking up the telephone, or by submitting comments through the Delta Council at its monthly meetings. The project, the plan, is going to develop. We are now in public scoping meetings. The first draft of the plan will be out on February 14th. I encourage you all to follow progress, to comment, to make comments, and engage with us in the development of the plan through the website at deltacouncil.ca.gov. Monthly council meetings, and soon they're going to actually be meeting twice a month, are all webcast. And the webcasts are archived, and if you have a nice foggy evening and want to settle in with a good mystery, watch a Delta Council meeting or two. But the drafts are going to evolve. The first one is May 14th. The first one is February 14th, and they will follow monthly. So we're going to have another draft in March, and another draft in April, and another draft in May, leading to what we think will be a final draft plan and the draft environmental impact report in June. That will go out for comment period, a 45 to 60 day comment period, and then it's going to come back into the council, and they're going to look at all of the comments that they received during that comment period and make changes, and we'll probably go through, the chair tells me, another two, maybe even three drafts before we come to the final by the end of the year, so we can meet the legislative deadline of January 1st. Tonight, we're looking for oral comments, the blue cards, the court reporter, the chair has been over that. They are written comments are due by January 28th. You can either send that to Delta Plan Scoping at deltacouncil.ca.gov or drop it in the mail to Terry McCauley. If it's postmarked before or by Friday, if it's postmarked by Saturday, we'll probably be able to get it in. As well as you can follow through the website. But this really doesn't end the ability to comment. If you get scoping comments in and something else occurs to you, send comments on the first draft, send comments on the second draft. Keep the comments coming, because we really want to engage in a two-way conversation. This is, I'm told not to use the word iterative, but at least it is an evolving process in writing the Delta plan. Lastly, just a reminder, if you want to comment to the council about something not directly related to scoping, we will have that comment period after the close of the scoping comments. And with that, we would open, or I'll turn it back to the chair to open the comment session.
Thank you very much. Again, some folks came in later. There's some blue forms in back, which are speaker forms. If you could fill it out, ask you to print your name carefully so the reporter can read it. Also, if you have something to say, could you use the microphone, because we are recording this for purposes of posting the entire session on the website so anybody in the state can listen to the darn thing. If you have trouble getting to the microphone, just wave at us. We'll bring the mic to you, and we'll go there. I'm just taking the blue forms in the order they were received, and the first is Paul Gosselin from the Butte County Department of Water and Resource Conservation. And Mr. Gosselin, I know we've gotten some communications from you before, from the board, certainly, and you also usefully put a reference number down on the bottom, which makes it an awful lot easier to do it. So could you spell your name for the court reporter, please? And
thank you, actually.
Go ahead.
God's always better sometimes than spelling, because my R's sometimes aren't decipherable. I want to thank you all for coming up to the region. I did have a couple brief comments. One, I did want to reference the communication that Butte County has submitted in on the Delta Vision process, the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. We've written in on the flow criteria. All those are relevant and capture the same essence of concerns that we have and want you to take into account on the scoping process. So,
and every communication we get, yours and everyone else, gets immediately posted on the website. I think we're now, because we got flooded by 3,000 emails on one day, we are now in something like 4 or 5,000 communications since April when the council started.
And the county will, once the draft comes out, get formal comments in, but there's two other points related to the scoping process that I do need to bring up and have you take into account. And I think one gets into the description you had, mostly out of Water Code 85020, and it gets into, I think, the discussion about the scope and authority the commission and the plan has in the primary delta area compared to the secondary area watershed. And I think the statute going through somewhat is a lot less stronger outside the water, outside of the primary delta, where a lot of it was looking at all the criteria being promotion or somewhat discretionary. So I think taking that into account, that there is a distinction between how you handle the primary delta versus how you address the rest of the watershed. And that gets into sort of the broader issue about sort of the protection and the concern outside the delta. We have, as part of the delta watershed, we have great concern and interest in a healthy delta ecosystem, but as much as that, we don't want the protection and solutions to the delta to affect what we have here and redirect those impacts. So that's a major concern as the process moves forward. And secondly, the section, and I didn't see anything in the scoping, the preliminary documents about 85031 language concerning protection of area of origin, county of origin, water rights. And that was an important addition into the legislation, and that needs to be referenced and accounted for in the scoping process as that moves forward. So like we've said before, as we've come up on the Delta Vision, the Delta is an important place, and that's been touted, but we also want to make clear that this is equally as important place that we want to cherish and protect the economy and environment and ecosystems here. So, thank you.
And Mr. Goslin, thank you for the letters you've been submitting, and I think we've gotten like six of them from the county in recent months, have the advantage of being written clearly, focused on pages, references, and so on. I know you're professionals, this is what you do for a living, but that's very helpful because it allows us to match up suggested language with ideas. And I'd encourage anybody else here to kind of, if there's a way of amplifying whatever you say tonight in writing, that helps us understand what you're trying to say. The next speaker is, and forgive me if I don't have the name right, it's Mr. John Janinas, I believe. There's something that's either an N or an H there, and I'm not sure. Mr. Janinas. Maybe you should spell your name for the court reporter.
My name is John Janinas, J-A-N-I-N-I-S, and I'm a citizen in good standing of Northern California for about 50 years, and I'm really concerned about the state's responsibility to ensure the disadvantaged communities that they have safe and affordable drinking water. Forcing farm workers and communities to rely on aquifers contaminated by agricultural chemicals while applying clean Sierra water to crops is a moral travesty. I suggest that you identify alternatives that places the quality of domestic water supplies in the forefront of objectives. And again, I want to thank you for being here, and I want to thank our community. What's really remarkable about what you're seeing here this evening, there are a lot of liberals, conservatives, and we're all together.
Yeah. One of the things you might want to look at, of the eight objectives the legislature imposed on us by statute that are on page 20 of the bill, one of them is improve water quality to protect human health and the environment consistent with achieving water quality objectives in the Delta. That pretty clearly links in all of this. But the legislature didn't tell us to do everything in the state affecting everything on water. The Delta is still the focus, whether the water flows from the watershed or it's exported out. That's kind of the the lens through which we're told to look at this stuff.
And at the same time, I just want to say I came from a meeting of alumni from Chico State, and they were, I've never heard this before, but they were saying, we need to become a different state, Northern California, not the rest of the state.
Assemblyman Stan Statham many years ago tried to do that and had a heck of a run with it, but it never got anywhere.
Right. We're thinking about it.
Thank you very much. Mr. James Townsend? Mr. Townsend? Yes, sir.
Good evening. My name's James Townsend.
How about you're much bigger than the rest of us, so you better pull that mic and maybe the stand up a little bit, please. Yeah, that's great. Terrific. You can't look through the podium, Ms. Marcus? Great. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, good to go, James. Yeah, my name is James Townsend. I live in Oroville, California. Resident there, small time rancher. Do a little bit of irrigation on it, properties to year-round pastures for my cattle. Anyway, have a lot of pressure coming up our way from Central California and what already took place in Southern California. And my questions are, is in the past, the removal of the water in Owens Valley, Southern San Joaquin, where my mother-in-law learned to ski, where I-5 is now, just south of the Grapevine. It's kind of devastating, the drop in the land and the collapsing of those aquifers. Now, I understand that water's been pumped out on that land to see if the aquifers could be brought back up, and the only thing they found was causing the minerals that rose above the land and making the ground unusable for anything, farming and otherwise, was just pushed back in the ground and came back up further south, up back out of the aquifer, which the aquifers were never the water was never reintroduced in the aquifers to what they were previous to the water removal. So being on that, what's going to happen in Northern California if this water is removed? We even also understand that the water has been removed even from Oroville Lake, and there have been holes drilled in the San Joaquin, and this has been done in small valleys outside, up above in the foothills on the east side, that the aquifers, with that water being pumped back into this reversed well, the aquifers were not able to be reinduced. So what is going to happen to us if we start utilizing this groundwater in Northern California, in the northern Sacramento Valley, and start pulling this out? Now, for instance, the ground swells from 3 inches. We're talking about houses, shops with equipment in them, swell 3 to 4.5 inches with only 3 to 4 feet of water flux in the soil. Now, this is an aquifer. We're talking about soil. So if this water is pulled out, how many feet is the northern Sacramento Valley going to drop?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, tomorrow, I think in the afternoon, the U.S. Geologic Survey, utilizing NASA's new satellite imaging system, which they've applied to California, is reporting to us at our meeting on their first findings. Now, they've published, I think it was last year, you probably saw a major rough estimate of subsidence and overuse of groundwater basins. We'll get all the particulars from them tomorrow. It will be broadcast live if you have a chance. You don't have to do it at the same time. You can get it through our website anytime. But we're looking forward to the same issues and questions because, you know, it's still supply and demand. The supply doesn't magically increase because folks want it to. It's there or it's not. And how we use our water statewide has to bear with how every other part of the state is affected. So we're trying to explore that. And I think you might be interested in that presentation. I'm sure looking forward to it. That's tomorrow on our website.
Well, the last part of that question is if this land does drop and you do utilize our groundwater, or we do to farm while you utilize our other means of water out of our lake, I understand just south of Yuba City and on 70, south of Marysville, they built houses there in a floodplain. Now, if we believe in global warming and the ocean does rise, we're going to have salt water in Yuba County. How are you going to keep that salt water out of the Delta if we're going to be below sea level in a matter of 5-6 years?
In fact, one of the things the legislation requires us to do, as well as this separate process that's going on, the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, the one that Governor Schwarzenegger set up, which is studying a new Delta conveyance system, is to, for planning purposes, address the potential of a 55-inch rise in sea level by the year 2100, which is our far-out planning requirement. Of course, the farther you're away from the ocean, the less impact you get from sea level rise. But for the Delta, there's an old, I believe, 2007, maybe 2008 map where they simply did elevations imposed on the statutory Delta. And for periodic flooding, I believe that, don't hold me to this figure, I believe the calculation was as much as 200,000 acres is potentially exposed to periodic flooding with a 55-inch rise. Now, it won't happen overnight. If it goes that high, may not go that high, could go higher. These are the questions we're kind of asking, which is why we want USGS to talk to us about these things, because we have to do something about it in the Delta plan, and we're trying to figure out what we should do.
Well, we've found salt water already in a few wells in Palermo, California. That's just south of Oroville.
Yeah.
So if this water starts being removed, what's that going to do to our aquifers on each side of the valley and our foothills? I mean, we're talking about drinking water. Well, who's going to help us with our ecosystem here in North Sacramento Valley?
Yeah, although the questions are somewhat different as we move up and down the state, as you might imagine, in the South Valley, they want to know how they can get more surface water to replace the declining aquifers that they've been using.
Right.
And I keep saying, well, I'd like to get everybody in the state sitting down in the same room so they could ask each other the same kinds of questions. But we're trying to puzzle our way through it. That's one of the reasons we want to get your comments and suggestions, if not tonight, hopefully in writing, about how you think we ought to approach it.
Well, who do we go to protect our ecosystem here in the northern Sacramento Valley?
I know that. And last night in Stockton, we were told that protecting the Delta ecosystem in San Joaquin County was, if not the top priority in California, darn close. We're trying to figure out how to balance that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Vontenpas, if I have that correctly. Myrna Vontenpas, my apologies. Maybe you better spell that for the court reporter, if you would, please.
Okay.
And pull that down, if you would, if you can. There you go. There we go.
Got it. Well, decreasing south of Delta's demands on the Sacramento Valley water must be, I believe, a primary goal of the Delta stewardship. And improving water supply reliability begins with the responsibility to use water reasonably and to avoid acquiescing to the demand to pour water on salty, low-quality farmland in the San Joaquin Valley. I suggest that you analyze an alternative that reduces demand on the Delta by retiring low-quality farmland on the western side of the San Joaquin Valley. Did you get that with all the...
Well, as a matter of fact, one of the things you might be interested in when you go back and look at the statute, the legislature and the governor adopted some language, deeply controversial, but it says the policy of the state of California is to reduce reliance on the Delta in meeting California's future water supply needs through a statewide strategy of investing in improved regional supplies, conservation, and water use efficiency. There are other sentences in there. As you might imagine, everybody wants to read that in the way that most favors their position, and we've had tons of lawyers writing letters to us or telling us different meanings that should be applied. We're struggling with that, but that's in the statute, and that was a very, very contentious part of the bill, and it's the first time I've ever seen the decreased reliance language anywhere in statute.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you very much. And by the way, is that, did I get, did you have a V-A-N-T-E-N-P-L?
D-E-N-P as in Paul, P-L-A-S.
Okay.
Van plus.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Barbara Hennigan, Ms. Hennigan.
One of the newspaper reports from south of the Delta said that you would be coming all the way as far north as Chico, and we really appreciate that. On your way here, you came past the Sutter Buttes. If you stand on the top of the buttes and look north, you will see the source of, depending on what source you use, 60 to 75% of the state's developed water. And you will also see 0.2% of the state's population, which is why nobody cares what we think. You should, however, be concerned about what we know. We know that despite reassuring claims to the contrary, we have been mining groundwater in this region for more than half a century. Longtime residents can tell about having to abandon hand-dug wells and having to lower irrigation and domestic wells time and time again. Within living memory, streams that once ran year-round have become seasonal, with dry periods starting earlier and lasting longer each season. Anthropologists at Chico State identified Indian village sites along the creeks north of Chico that were continuously inhabited for thousands of years, but are now untenable. The streams that were a supply of water for those villages provided water during a time period that's covered several mega droughts of 50 years or more. Once connected to the aquifer, they are now losing streams, seeping into the empty spaces, the once filled with groundwater. We know that the climate change projections in the California Water Plan update for 2009 make it readily apparent that the greatest loss of the snowpack will be in the watershed of the Feather River. Lake Oroville will have to become little more than a surge pond, emptied between storms to make space behind the dam for the next one. What happens to the state water reserves if the agency miscount just one storm? We know that the point at which the Sacramento River itself becomes a permanently losing stream has moved from just south of the Sutter Buttes north to Princeton in just a few years. What happens to the Delta if or when the Sacramento River becomes another San Joaquin? How will the San Francisco Bay keep from becoming a toxic pit if there is no river flow to flush effluents from aged and inadequate sewage treatment plants? We know that every drop of water that falls in this watershed, except those drops used by the few people that are up here and the green growing things, is ultimately headed for the Delta. The only way to get more is to detach the streams and river systems from the groundwater that supports them and get rid of all those pesky phreatophytes like valley oaks, streamside vegetation, and to decimate North State agriculture. We also know that the powerful interests driving water transfers from north to south of the Delta have timelines based not on any vision of a sustainable future, but on the next quarterly report or the next election. 2 weeks ago, the Bureau of Reclamation came and held a similar meeting in Chico, at which the locals wanted to talk about the third-party impacts of water transfers to the neighbors, to the environment, and to the economy. The agency people repeated over and over that they were not responsible for third-party impacts. They were merely moving water from willing sellers to willing buyers. It was eerily reminiscent of German railway workers. We never killed any Jews. We just moved the trains from place to place. In your EIR, you really should ask the questions, what are the justifications for believing that unlike any other stream or river system in the world, the Sacramento River flows will be unaffected by the loss of the groundwater that supports it. To protect the Delta, you must protect the source of the water that flows into it. It will be interesting to see when you return to south of the Buttes that you succumb to some of the willful blindness that has characterized California water management to date. Because when the Sac Valley crashes, the Delta, and indeed all of California, crashes with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hannigan. The next speaker is Mark Herrera. Mr. Herrera.
That's Mark Herrera, M-A-R-K-H-E-R-R-E-R-A. Thanks for having us here tonight. I know it's legally binding for you to be here, but thanks anyways. I live in the Butte Basin region of the northern Sacramento Valley watershed. This area is home to the single remaining robust wild salmon run in the entire Central Valley, home to the old growth valley oaks and sycamore groves, home to hundreds of independent farmers, and home to the Sierra Nevada Brewery. Providing a more reliable water supply for California and protecting, restoring, and enhancing the Delta ecosystem must not come at the cost of destabilizing the Butte Basin hydrological balance. I suggest that you examine alternatives that do not increase demand on groundwater or encourage water transfer sales out of the northern Sacramento Valley. Again, I suggest that you examine alternatives that do not increase demand on groundwater or encourage water transfer sales out of the Sacramento Valley. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The next speaker from Aqua Alliance is Ms. Barbara Vlamas. Is it Vlamas? Did I get that right? Vlamas? Vlamas. Okay.
You did get that. Thank you. I would like to present, though. You heard about this last night in Stockton. People up here did not, that there was joint scoping comments submitted on behalf of a number of environmental justice.
30 environmental organizations, and if, you know, we didn't bring all the comments in writing,
right,
but they were posted to our website today. So if any of you are interested in getting copies, I think it was a 8-page document, 10-page,
yeah,
something like that. It's on the website and available for everyone to read.
Yes, and it's also on our website. Thank you. And I was a contributing author to part of the document, and I wanted to highlight some of those areas that were particularly pertinent to our geographic region and for the public, that some of them that know nothing about it. Reducing reliance on the Delta and its watersheds, and I was one that snuck in, and its watersheds, because sometimes I think as an environmentalist and as state and federal agencies too become so focused on the Delta, they forget the contributing parts. And I'm an anthropologist by education, and so the holistic view is very important to me. Recognize that California has dramatic opportunities to invest in regional water supplies, urban ag conservation, wastewater recycling, etc., that can allow the state to meet its future needs while simultaneously facilitating the restoration of the Delta ecosystem and its watersheds. Another section in the cover letter that was equally important to me is this equitable governance. Frequently, in our region, we feel underrepresented even within the region. I also know that on the larger playing field, local government as well as the NGOs and interested farmers feel completely left out of these kind of processes. So we do appreciate that you're here. I mean, that is honorable, and we very, very much appreciate it. But as many of the Delta folks feel, magnify that maybe 50 or 100 times how people up here feel, that they aren't included, even though you're talking about our geographic area. So if you can, as you consider decisions that will be reached and impacts that might develop, you must include us in the discussion. I really emphasize that. Developing enforceable assurances and enforcement mechanisms to ensure the achievement of biological goals, protection of third parties, and groundwater basins is a must. It absolutely must happen. We must not repeat what we've already seen in the Owens Valley, the San Joaquin Valley. We must not march further north. We must stop. To the greatest extent possible, habitat restoration within the Delta and its watersheds must be based on sound science and community viability. Very important. Specifically, in Delta and upstream interests must be full partners in developing and implementing habitat restoration programs and goals so that a desirable mix of aquatic habitat restoration and sustainable agriculture is achieved. We must recognize that habitat protection, and this that word is not in our collaborative document. I am putting in protection because some of the state hasn't been destroyed yet. And we should try to hold on to what we have as well as restore. So the sentence reads, recognize that habitat protection, my word, and restoration upstream of the Delta is a necessary component for restoration of species dependent on the Delta and its watersheds, develop clear goals and objectives for habitat protection and restoration upstream of the Delta. In the section about water transfers, something that those of us in this region are very concerned about and have been for some time. This was my wording, and I appreciated all my colleagues understood it immediately, though it had not occurred to them. Ensure that water transfers do not result in harm to source area groundwater, aquifers, or aquatic resources. I think a lot of people that work on the Delta are so accustomed to the problems that have occurred south of the Delta that they don't even recognize there's some health still up here. And while Barbara Hennigan is absolutely right, mining has been occurring up here, and we have to be mindful about how much more we do up here. We do not want to accelerate what occurred in 1994 and demonstrated to us that we are very vulnerable. In 1994, there was a drought water bank, and through a series of years, they had done some groundwater substitution with surface water transfers occurring. They're relatively small, 30,000 acre feet in that ballpark. In 94, they increased the amount to 105,000 acre feet of water in a rather concentrated area, but still from the transfers that people propose from up here, that's still small. What happened? Deep ag wells, shallow residential wells, a community well in Durham, all had problems. Some sucked air. They had to shut the Durham well down. Water quality problems because the water was moving in a very acharacteristic manner. What happened in that period, the people that were affected went immediately to their neighbors who were pumping the groundwater acharacteristically. They normally just used their surface water, but they were selling it, continuing operations with their groundwater. They went to them and asked, would you please change the timing? Would you consider moving, you know, using wells further away from us? Try to change your patterns. They were told to go hire an attorney. DWR's response was the same. This is not the transfer. It's a drought. That's why you guys are having problems, even though they never had before. So that was the first experiment that caught all of our attention. And we are very cognizant of that being part of our history up here, and we do not want to see that replicated. I have a question, if I may. How will the federal government's plans because as they mentioned, the Bureau was just here proposing a 10-year, 600,000-acre-foot water transfer program out of this area. How will the federal government intersect
with this? A good question, one we ask ourselves almost every day. The statute told us to consult with federal agencies in advance, and so we've been meeting with, you know, just like everybody does with all the agencies. There is at least one difference. The Delta Plan, once adopted, if the council chooses to, can be treated as a possible addition to what's called the Coastal Zone Management Act. I'm sorry about all the acronyms, but, you know, it's a federal law that has been used to recognize California state authority in the ocean, in the state waters off our shores, 3 miles out. And the Coastal Commission was California Coastal Commission was designated as a CZMA acceptable entity. Now, that doesn't mean the federal government has surrendered authority to the California Coastal Commission, nor does it mean that they have opened their checkbooks. And Ms. Marcus at one time was a top-notch Environmental Protection Agency official on this, and she's familiar with it. However, it turns out to be one of the more satisfactory long-term relationships between multiple federal agencies and the state of California, because they have the legal assuredness that the Department of Commerce, which governs it, and NOAA, have essentially checked off on the adequacy of the overall process. Felicia, correct me if I'm wrong. And the federal government is generally satisfied the state is doing okay. Still have to negotiate with them, but you're part of the same family discussion. And one of the things we're going to be talking about, if we do this plan correctly, we have the legislative statutory direction, if we choose to submit it to become a part of a Coastal Zone Management Act, if the feds agree. And that would be like 100% better, in my view, than just kind of amorphous, let's consult with each other and love each other. That's the one area where we have clear direction to proceed in a formal and ultimately, if the feds accept it, a legal relationship to deal with the Delta Plan. Nothing's perfect, and no state can ever totally control the federal government, but that would be significantly advantageous, we think, we've been told. It's a little far down the path. We have to get through and adopt the plan and then start the process with CZMA.
Well, thank you for that. If I may encourage then, since this is a scoping process, that in the cumulative impact section of the EIR that will be coming out, you must then incorporate all of these plans that the federal agency is coming forward with, like I said, like this 600,000-acre-foot 10-year water transfer program, in a cumulative impact analysis.
Well, let me tell you about that. We have been specifically directed to potentially include a whole bunch of plans, mostly state plans, but we've been given the discretion to include portions of federal plans if they seem appropriate. The problem we're facing is almost no one else is going to complete their process before we adopt the Delta Plan. So, for example, the most controversial thing is the study of the facilities in the Delta, the Bay Delta Conservation Plan. The schedule was they were supposed to finish before this body ever got created. Well, looks like it's going to be a year, 18 months, maybe a little bit longer after that. There's a process in statute where we must consider their plan. That's in the legislation, although we retain a potential appellate role to determine the adequacy of the Department of Fish and Game's determination that they've met all the environmental laws. Very, very interesting and equally controversial feature. We've been directed to include, if it's ready to go, the Central Valley Flood Management Plan, which is a major regional plan. It'll be ready, I keep pessimistically saying, by 2017, but Keith and some of the others say, oh, maybe by 2015. And the federal plans are not dissimilar. Everyone's proposing things. Plans move at their own pace. We will take a look at things such as the recent federal proposal, but I can't tell you automatically that every time the federal government or any state agency proposes any action anywhere in the study area, we're going to prejudge and second guess it. We're ordered to amend the Delta plan or consider amending it at least every 5 years or more frequently if we choose once it's adopted. And I suspect there'll be a lot of changes and amendments after. Felicia.
There, got it. I won't want to put words in your mouth, but we should take note of it, I think, is the point in the cumulative impacts, because it's happening.
Well, and my understanding of CEQA, and I am not an attorney, but I have certainly used it through the years, is that when you produce your EIR, is that you must look at recently passed, current, and foreseeable projects in the cumulative impact analysis.
Yeah, one of the reasons we're doing these scoping meetings is we record it, we have all the documentation, okay. We listen to the notes, and we are developing a kind of a checklist of all the questions we have to ask on exactly those issues. If you want to supplement it with reference to a specific federal statute or regulatory section or petition number, that would be very, very helpful.
Be happy to do
and
that.
And you could do that later by email.
Absolutely. We'll be happy to do that. And I would just like to close with, you're always looking for solutions. The solutions from our perspective is the hardscape projects that have surfaced as in the peripheral canal or dual conveyance or all the various names that it has, very expensive and not necessarily productive in the long run. Conservation, retirement of contaminated lands, and water recycling, I think, for the buck, the biggest thing that this state can do for itself. Thank you.
Ma'am, before you... I wanted to follow up to your example. In 1994, you piqued my interest as related to not only the impacts you were having, but I think the response that you pointed out wasn't exactly your words, but we were told, go pound dirt or hire an attorney.
Yeah.
What transpired after that year when you had the transfers and then the additional pumping? Was there a return to normalcy in some of those areas in Durham and so forth, or has it continued to be problematic even now 17 years later?
No, it did recover. It was apparently, at least to the population that exists at this time, knowledge that that was the most severe reaction that we have encountered up here. It did recover, but there was no monitoring of the environment. This was the monitoring. We're seeing the impacts. So we have no idea what it did long-term to the environment. We have no knowledge up here. It's one of the most significant things, and we keep telling the Bureau this when they come here too, is there is no scientific knowledge about this region. We don't know how much water the aquifer, quote, holds. We don't know where the aquifer is, quote, recharged. We don't know how fast it can recharge. There is monitoring that has been going on through the years, but it's been pretty minimal, and there is not any enforcement up here. I mean, the Bureau always points to, oh, well, you have local ordinances now, and everything will be okay. Many of the ordinances have no enforcement mechanism. They're a step in the right direction, but they aren't the end result that we need.
Yeah, just one follow-on question. And so, with there was 30,000 acre feet that was banked, and then they pumped three times that much, or released three times that much, 105,000. I want to be sure I was clear on the detail.
My understanding is in 91 and 92, some of the irrigation districts sold about 40,000 acre feet of surface water,
okay, so
substituted
surface water.
Ground. 93 was a better year. There weren't water transfers. 94, they ramped up to 105.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. I appreciate the history. It's very important. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Next speaker is Allie Hostler from the Hoopa Valley Tribe. Ms. Hostler, there you are. Good to see you again. You found us, I can't remember, was it Manteca or where in the Dickens was it?
Clarksburg.
Yep.
Great little town hall there in Clarksburg. Well, my name is Allie Hostler, for the other folks who didn't meet me in Clarksburg. I'm a member of the Hoopa Valley Tribe in Hoopa. And for you folks here, you think they came far north. Well, I came far south. So, and this does affect us way out in the Trinity Basin, even though that doesn't come up much. The river my tribe has lived alongside for millennia, the Trinity is often forgotten in discussion about the Delta and its state of peril. I'm here to ask that you don't forget about the Trinity, the Hoopa people's lifeblood, the soul of our community, and the heart of our culture is in that river. I don't mean to be insensitive to the folks here and their concerns about the Sacramento Basin, but I'm here to talk about the Trinity. The Trinity has made possible irrigation in the Sacramento Valley and the San Joaquin Valley. The Trinity was dammed and diverted by way of the 1955 Trinity River Division Act, in which promises were made to the communities in the basin and the Hoopa tribe. Some of those promises, in a nutshell, are promise number one, the diversion wouldn't hurt fish. That's sort of laughable now. 10 years after the diversion occurred, 80% of the fishery was destroyed. We're still trying to recover from that. Promise number two, a limited amount of water would be taken, somewhere between 17 and 50%. Unfortunately, that didn't happen either. 90% of the river was sent south, out of the Trinity Basin from 1963 to 2004. Promise number three, that a minimum of 50,000 acre feet would be made available to Humboldt County and other downstream users, in addition to the fishery restoration flows that were agreed upon in the 2000 Record of Decision that was signed by the Secretary of Interior and our tribe's chairman. 50,000 acre feet, as I didn't catch her name, said, it seems like a drop in the bucket. We're not asking for much. That's what was promised to us in 1955 with the Trinity River Division Act, and it's never been delivered. That's not the state's fault, per se. That's a deal with Reclamation Interior. But I think it's important for you guys to make note of that in this plan, because what I'm, well, I'll get to that. Promise number four came with the CVPIA in 1992, that water contractors would be responsible to pay the cost of restoration. The Trinity River Restoration Program has gone severely underfunded since its kickoff in 2004, setting restoration timelines back even further. So how does this relate to scoping? What I'm here to say is that any plan for the Delta must acknowledge and hold the appropriate authorities accountable for promises made to the Hoopa Valley Tribe and Humboldt County in the Trinity Basin. Trinity River restoration must be thoroughly supported in the Delta plan. The 50,000 acre feet promised to the basin communities of Humboldt County cannot be considered available for diversion out of the Trinity Basin under the Delta plan. South of the Delta, contractors must be held responsible for the environmental damages the diversions they have financially benefited from have caused. Our preliminary observations of the ever-changing hydrological modeling that is, I guess, an ongoing work under the Delta plan, our concerns with that is what really brings me here. It's essential for us to clarify now, early in the process, what water is unavailable for the Delta plan, and that's water to maintain Trinity River restoration and water that was promised to our county and our communities over 50 years ago. So thank you.
The next speaker is Mr. Ashlock, Mr. Mike Ashlock.
My name is Mike Ashlock. It's A-S-H-L-O-C-K. And I come from an area, foothills of the area above Oroville, an area called Concow. And up there we had a fire a couple of years ago that burnt down big forests. So we've been cutting down trees. Some of them are 3 foot across to mill them up. And this is just anecdotal evidence. I'm not a scientist. But when I look at the rings on those trees, some of them are very close together. And some of them are very, very wide rings. And it's sort of a feedback from history up to a couple hundred years on some of the trees I've looked at of some of those droughts and heavy water areas through the years. Some of the folks up in our area have had wells gone dry in the last few years because we've had low water years. This is in the Yankee Hill area, kind of right across from Concow. I've been just getting kind of interested in water rights because I've been working with a group in our area called the Golden Feather Community Alliance, and we work on sustainability issues and just trying to get aware of water in our area and how it affects us. And I just got a book from the library. It's Introduction to Water in California, so I'm just kind of getting aware of this issue. One of the things I have become aware of is that there is an entity called the Junior Water Rights folks that their designation in their receiving of water, if I understand correctly, is that they have to relinquish by their contract water during drought years. And what I'm a bit afraid of is that if they get really addicted to our water, that they're going to have so much of a demand that you're not going to want to hold them to that contract and make them stop using that water. I would like you to continue that contract so that they have to give up those water rights during drought years.
One of the sections of the bill that you might want to take a look at, again, very controversial. Legislature and the governor said that in ultimately resolving conflicts, two constitutional level provisions are involved. The first is Article 10 of the state constitution, which is the beneficial use, but it must be reasonable and there can be no wasting provision, adopted by the voters in 1928. And the other is what's called the public trust doctrine, which was most famously in recent years applied in the Mono Lake dispute against the city of Los Angeles. Both of those are constitutional doctrines, and they are, I think it's fair to say, balancing tests. They are not, you know, yes, you can dominate one interest over another automatically. But of course, a lot of people like the rules as long as they are sure that it will promote their interest. And we're struggling and would like some advice from you on how that might be applied in situations. It's a very difficult question, and water law and water rights is among the most complicated things I've ever seen in my life, and I'm a lawyer. It's dense.
I'd like to give you one other kind of anecdotal experience. Is when I was a kid, I visited relatives in Las Vegas almost every year, and we would go to Lake Mead behind Hoover Dam, and the water would raise up in Lake Mead every year. And the reason I know that is we would go down and catch lizards that were run up by the water from the rocks. And 40 years later, when I went back to take care of my relatives when they got to be pretty aged, I took a trip to Lake Mead, and that water level is way down. I don't think it ever raises up. It's got a huge bathtub ring around the lake. And are some of us that are as old as I am, we've seen the population double in the world in our lifetime. And when I was a kid in Las Vegas, my relatives lived right on the edge of the desert. When I went back 40 years later, it was miles, miles to the edge of the desert. And this is a case where, for them, the Colorado River, their allotment can't raise the lake any further than that bathtub ring. So I'd like you to keep that contract for the junior water rights folks. And this book is in the library for my fellow Chico members. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. The next speaker is Mr. James Brobeck, another member of Aqua Alliance. Mr. Brobeck? Yes, sir.
Thank you for traveling all the way up here. Barbara Hannigan mentioned the mega droughts. I hope that the Delta Stewardship Council is taking into account the recent geological history of the western United States, which in the past 1,300 years includes a couple periods of drought that lasted well over 100 years. She also mentioned that there's archaeological evidence that the people who were living here during that time period didn't have to leave in spite of these extended periods of drought. And I urge you to consider what allowed the people of the Sacramento Valley to stay here during these periods of extended drought. And I contend that it was a robust, fully charged aquifer system that provided the habitat all the way up here and all the way down to the delta that you're trying to restore. The Butte Basin aquifer system, on which we are right now, from the Sutter Buttes up to approximately Redding, to the Coast Range and up here to the foothills, that includes Butte Creek, that, as Mark mentioned, has the last remaining robust wild run of salmon in the entire Central Valley, is all supported by this Butte Basin aquifer. And the aquifer provides us a modest buffer against these extreme weather conditions that are not out of the ordinary. They're not outside of the realm of normal weather, though they are maybe in the experience of Californians, Americans. 1,300 years ago is not that long, and we could well have multi-decade droughts in the future in which the buffer that the groundwater now provides us would be beneficial for not just us, but all the way down into the delta. We need this buffer. You need this buffer. Surplus water will flow naturally, just like it flows out of high mountain meadows in the Feather River watershed, if you allow it to recharge, if you rehabilitate and maintain a robust hydrologic cycle. The Butte Basin system must not be viewed by Delta planners as a backstop for dry year reservoir shortages. I demand that you create and analyze alternatives that recognize the range of droughts in the short-term geologic history and the value of intact, balanced aquifers that are maintained at high water levels.
Thank you, sir. The next speaker is Diane Suzuki. Ms. Suzuki? Oh, there you are.
S-U-Z-U-K-I. Well, as so many have voiced, I too advocate for our local groundwater to stay balanced and connected to its natural terrestrial system. The Butte Basin aquifer system is the foundation of our watershed, and we won't let it collapse, as did the rivers and aquifers of the San Joaquin Valley. Many people are familiar with the concept of peak oil. The world has reached peak water. Attempting to squeeze more water out of the Sacramento Valley threatens us with severe consequences. South of the Sutter Buttes, the Sacramento River is losing water into the depleted South Sacramento Valley aquifer. The Oroville Reservoir remains half full year after year, even after normal precipitation years. And independent farmers are having to pull water from deeper levels. These are indications that the Sacramento Valley has reached peak water. Our vision locally includes restoration of our stream flows, return of strong salmon runs, expansion of our valley oak sycamore groves, and reliable water levels in our wells. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next speaker is Mr. James Townsend. Mr. Townsend? Thank you. Also, we just handed a copy of the statement material, and we'll add this officially to the record by Ms. Suzuki. Thank you. Ms. Townsend?
Thank you. James Townsend. This is kind of a water 101 to me. I'm just waking up to the whole affair, so thank you, all of you, for your education, as I'm taking all of this in, and it's just overwhelming. Really a lot of deep concerns. I worked for a company that agriculture for 33 years of my life, And so it's very near and dear to me, the ag in this country, in this part of the country. One of the questions that, or one of the statements that were made in a meeting was that an almond tree in the lower valley below the delta would need more water than any of our trees north of the delta because of our rainfall, the lower rainfall there. And she suggested that it was something like 3.5 inches, and I'm not sure that that is right in that area. And they're talking about increasing our reservoir capacity to accommodate the southern part of the state. And in another water meeting, one of the questions that hit me was, then why do we stop development and preserve the water? And they said, well, you can't stop development. Well, if you don't have the water, then it's irresponsible to keep developing as we have been. One of the meetings, they were showing the degradation that was caused to an aquifer in the mid-state, and I was trying to catch up with it, and I didn't understand what the slide was showing us. But we certainly don't want that to happen to ours up here. I realize that you have a dire need for water. Being in agriculture, I just cringe to see those trees in the lower state devastated because they cut the water off. And I couldn't understand that when they were running water out of the delta out into the ocean and wouldn't let those growers have that water. Mismanagement is just rampant in this, as far as I can see. But like I say, I'm just trying to catch up with all of this affair. And it really sickens me to see the things happen that are happening. They let water out of our system, supposedly to keep the water cool for the salmon. Well, I've lived here since I was 18 years old, and I'm in my 70s now. And I fished in the Feather River year after year after year, and you could swim anywhere in that water that you wanted to. It was 70 degrees plus. And you could wade across it, and in so many places it was amazing. Well, they're causing a false environment for those fish. That is not even right. And I think they're using them as an excuse to run our water out of our lake so we won't become accustomed to it being at the level that it should be for recreation. And it just amazes me that the things that they promised us when Lake Orville was built for recreation, it would never drop below 70 feet. We would have the water that I think it's 28,000 acre feet, if anybody knows. Correct me. And now we're paying for it $1,200,000 a year. If we don't use it, then it's shipped out of our facility because that's not our storage up there. They just, DWR has told us. I think they just have turned us upside down. And it's really becoming annoying. And I don't want to be that way about it, but we have been promised so much and given so little through the development of Lake Orville. I certainly don't want to see them increase it, take more of our land from us that are tax base in Butte County that we are not reimbursed for. We have all of the police and rescue mission, rescue service that has burdened the county of Butte. There's so many things involved in this. And then I was sitting there, one gentleman said, well, if you lower aquifer by 10 feet, you're going to kill our valley oaks. And I thought, wow, you know, I never even thought about that. If you start pumping our aquifer, that's what you're going to cause. Well, how much more of that? I was involved in the Grange at the state meeting, and I got into a water and agriculture debates there, and they were talking about a peripheral canal down the west side of our Sacramento Valley. And I said, wow, where are you going to get the water over there? I have family up around Pascana, and their well, their aquifer, is contaminated. I mean, you can't drink the water. But they're talking about sending water south. They said, oh, they're going to take all the tributaries that come off of that coast range to the aquifer and go into the aquifer and go into the delta to keep the salt intrusion out of the way from the pumps. And I thought, well, what about the ecosystem below that, your habitat for your animals? I mean, this is unconscionable that they'd even suggest these things. So there's just a multitude of things that just keep piling up that maybe I don't understand. But it just seems like that this is going too fast for the impact that it's going to have on this area of the state. And I'm sorry, fellas, I think your money is what's driving the system. And I begged one group to please remember that this part of the county relies on agriculture for its lifeblood. If it wasn't for our agriculture, we would just dry up. No pun intended. And another thing that came to me was, if you've got a gallon of water, say, let's keep it simple, and you send it to its destination to the delta and south, how much of that is lost in evaporation? You have lost the efficiency of your water by shipping it south that could be used here in the northern part of the state. If you want to grow almond trees, come on up here. There's plenty of ground that could grow almond trees or grow your crops. I know that ground may be cheaper down there because there was no water to begin with, but don't take it from us you lost your efficiency. It just doesn't make good sense. Stop the development. We have that problem in Paradise. They're talking and putting multiple housing units up there. And where on earth are they going to get their water? Those people have problems every year without water. So there's a lot of things and concerns in these that just really are coming to light to me, because I have never really got my head into it and kept abreast. So please, please take our water with the utmost of seriousness. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Townsend. Sounds to me like, for somebody who's just getting into this, you are developing a pretty broad understanding pretty fast. Mr. Curtis Anderson from the Department of Water Resources in Red Bluff. Mr. Anderson.
Good evening. Thank you for coming to Chico and taking our comments. My name is Curtis Anderson, CurtisAnderson. I manage the Northern Region Office of the Department of Water Resources in Red Bluff. I'm also currently serving as the Klamath River Compact Commissioner for the state of California. And I'm referencing in this notice of preparation, page 11, line 35, and the map on page 12.
Hold on, let us grab our NOP so we can follow you on this, please. And, okay, page 11.
Page 11, line 35, there's a sentence that's talking about the secondary planning area.
Yes, sir.
And if I understand that right, it's ending at the downstream side of Alley's Reservation in Wichipec at the end of the Trinity River, if I understand that right. And I guess I would suggest that if you're talking about reservoir reoperations on the Trinity River, mm-hmm. that those flows continue down the Klamath River and could have an impact both on flow and on temperature on the Klamath River, and that you extend the secondary planting area to the mouth of the Klamath River.
I must confess, in all of these hearings, you're the first person I've heard who wants us to extend the territory anywhere. I note that. Let us make a note of that, and we'll consider the issue.
So it'd be changes in flow down the Trinity from reoperation, and then change in carryover storage in the cold water pool of Trinity for temperature reasons could have an impact both ways. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. And also, if you think of anything else you want to add, or if you want to amplify those points in writing, we'd very much appreciate getting something from you, which we'll post on our website immediately. Thank you. Mr. David Janus. Mr. Janus.
Yes,
Janus, I'm sorry. Janina. Oh, it is. I'm sorry. 2I. Okay.
Thanks for being here tonight. It's David Janinas, J-A-N-I-N-I-S. And how do I move this up? Oh, there we go. Maybe a suggestion is to get a clean canteen. Just because that helps with the problem is transferring water. But I live in beautiful Chico, California, a great riparian environment with oak trees and other plants and animal life that requires water. Water in the wells and in the creeks are key for these trees to naturally stay alive. We grow rice, almonds, olives, and many varieties of food locally. We are working hard to make our way of life sustainable, local, and it is our observation, we the people, that water transfers are not sustainable. So how many people here can honestly believe that we can continue to take away natural resources? Let's come up with a plan that gives back to the earth for once, and not just create another problem or move the problem. Just once can we keep our natural habitat and ecosystem at the front of our decision making. We have the opportunity to be a healthy conscience, so let's choose that through university science, not just government-sponsored ideals. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker is Ms. Grace Marvin. Ms. Marvin.
I'm watching you as I'm listening to the speakers, and I can see that you too, most of you it seems, are very impressed with the stories of the people up here and the depth of our concern. And I don't have any new story to present to you, but I have a question. And that is, how can you and we best get it across to the administration, to the regulators in Sacramento, that pursuing a variety of water efficiencies would both be much more economical than pumping, exporting, damming, and tunneling, and would be less environmentally damaging to the Delta and to the North State?
Yeah, one of the objectives is to encourage and promote conservation water use efficiency, and if I remember the other clause, and sustainable water use, that's in the statute. How you do it is another thing. And the other point I'd make, and perhaps you might give us some comments, we've received written material and testimony from Peter Glick at the Pacific Institute, you're familiar with him. And one of the issues that I believe they're going to be exploring is the question of how soon you can expect compliance with changes in law or regulations mandating efficiencies. As you know, it's nothing happens overnight. Convincing people to change their behavior is, if not harder than anything else, darn hard. If you have any thoughts on that and have ways to approach it, we'd very much like to hear that.
This is more a political question, I guess. The governor is very concerned about money. I heard him interviewed today. He doesn't know how he's going to address the state of the state because money is the bottom line. If money is the bottom line, then one big way to save it is by emphasizing conservation and not this massive transfer of water. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Marvin. Mr. Jeff Fricker. Mr. Fricker? There you come. Yes, sir.
You know, I'm Jeff Fricker. I live in Butte Creek Canyon, and I've been a resident for almost 35 years in this area. I guess what I would like to talk about a little bit is I'm aware of something, and I just wanted to bring it up with regard to the junior water rights. It's sort of a separate issue. The richest water district in the world, my understanding, is Westland Water District out of Fresno. And they're driving a lot of this, as is my understanding. I do know that they recently purchased, and I'm asking this question because I'm interested in how it affects their junior water rights, because they recently purchased some land on Shasta Lake. And Shasta Lake, of course, used to be a free-running river, and the salmon, of course, stop at that point. But anyway, now at this point in time, the McLeod River is one of the tributaries that comes into Shasta Lake and has one of the best rainbow trout fisheries in the world. And the rainbow trout that are so famous in New Zealand actually came from the McLeod. And I believe it was the Folgers Company or the Folgers family that owned that piece of property. And Westland Water District bought it. And I'm sure the reason they bought it is because if the dam is ever raised, they will have frontage water. And I guess they would get appropriative water rights just because they're on the water. I don't know. But I'm just wondering if that affects their junior water rights. And if it is, if it does, it just seems awfully insidious.
Well, but first of all, it's complicated. Let me. I know you've asked a simple question. I know enough to know it's complicated. Individuals or businesses or water districts, governmental agencies, have a right to use quantifiable amounts of water. If you have riparian rights, that is, if you own property along rivers or streams, when California became a state, you should check me on this, we inherited the British common law, which allowed riparian users to use a reasonable amount of water beneficially on their property. Then the doctrine of appropriative rights came along, and that, I guess the best way to say that is, we're not along the river, but we've been using the water from it for a long time. This was gold miners originally, Feather, Yuba, right. Sacramento, American River. And California essentially grandfathered in appropriative right holders, that is, people who were using water, didn't have riparian rights, and now a lot of lawyers say the riparian and appropriative have been merged. Now, I don't know whether that's true, but that's what I'm told. Starting in 1914, the predecessor state agency to what's now the Water Resources Control Board began issuing water permits, which everybody calls water rights, for quantities of water to individuals, to businesses, government agencies. By 1927, the legislature figured out that what was happening is the water supply of California was being allocated out to individual parties, and the legislature and the governor allocated the remaining unappropriated water rights to the state of California. The state then signs contracts permitting use of water. And of course, one of the contracting parties was the federal government, which runs the Central Valley Project, which provides most of the water to the west side farmers in the valley. Not all, I think, but most. Westlands argues that the concept of junior water right holders is not applicable in their case, and I'm not an expert enough to tell you the legal answer to that. But all of the permits, whether federal or state, carry terms, that is, they expire just like any contract over time. They have terms and conditions, and the law of the state constitution that use must be beneficial, it must be reasonable, and it cannot be wasting predominates. And it's under that the constitution applies to surface water and underground water. The courts have determined that. As you might imagine, people who are faced with the possibility of dealing with the provisions of the Constitution are not enthusiastic about limits, and so that has led to decades of battles whenever it's attempted to apply. Now, having said that, that is not answering your question because I don't know enough. This is truly the most complex area of the law I've ever seen in any subject area.
Well, I just wanted to mention that, but the main thing I wanted to mention is to kind of reinforce what Barbara had said earlier about protecting this area. And what I wanted to get at there is using water for the most beneficial use of the water. That's, I know, a very important criteria.
Well, the law is not
most beneficial use.
There's a big controversy. People argue that any beneficial use must be respected. And somebody says, wait a minute, you're just growing hay, for God's sakes. You're wasting water.
Okay.
The law is not entirely clear.
Right.
That a proper but low economic value is not beneficial. It may well be beneficial.
Well, I guess what my concern is protecting the area, and the beneficial use would be sustainably.
That's
sustainably keeping
that. Those are separate statute, usually called area of origin protections, which are the ones that most of the counties up here would assert.
Okay.
Gives a higher level of protection to the collective counties. But those are not quantified. They are not quantified, as I understand it. Listen, there are water managers sitting in here. Tell me if I'm wrong. I don't think the area of origin statute says all the water ever to be seen for all time that passes through Butte County must stay in Butte County without restriction. I don't think it says that.
The point is, let's jump down to the San Joaquin just for a real quick second to tell you what's happened there. It was just recently. After 20 years of legislation and lawsuits, they finally opened up the San Joaquin. It completely dried up, completely. But now, because of the Endangered Species Act, they were able to open up the river. Farmers who had been basically moved into the floodplain, not only into the floodplain, into the main channel of the river, were complaining because the river was going across their farm again. That's how detached and how insulated they became in terms of awareness of having a sustainable kind of watershed for their farms. We here have a very sustainable situation where water is coming down. We want to protect. We are also doing some restoration, to be sure, because the Shasta Dam went in, the Red Bluff Dam went in. There's plenty of restoration to go around because of the salmon and the Endangered Species Act. But we have a very sustainable watershed that works well here. And what Barbara was talking about is protecting what we've got. And that's the most beneficial use of water long term. Because as soon as you start taking the water off the surface and then pumping the groundwater, then all of a sudden you're starting to run into the same problem the San Joaquin had. And then you're not having beneficial use of water either way. And that's, I think she made it very, very clear, but I guess I just want to make it even, I just wanted to re-emphasize that and kind of identify this sort of callousness that's down there. There's a totally different mindset. And I would add that the gold miners who started this whole thing, they were into it for the profit, and I see a lot of Southern California into it for the profit. They went from cotton, which was very, very consumptive for water. They finally decided to stop using cotton because that's not the most beneficial use of water. I suppose it could be defined if cotton is a high priority, but it definitely sucked up way too much water. Now they're using almonds, and that's year-round water. They need to use something that's seasonal. And I just feel like, you know, you have to kind of work with what you've got. And that's what we're doing here, but we don't want to be sending our water south. We have a very effective farm system right here. Why destroy something up here that's working quite well to make something that's not working well down there? I don't know what to do. I mean, send it down there and let them abuse it some more, I guess. Anyway, that's my...
Thank you very much. Mr. Robin Huffman? Ms. Huffman.
Thank you. This is one of the best water meetings I've been to. I've been to some that aren't so interactive, and I appreciate the workshop quality of this one. And I'm from Paradise.
By the way, the staff keeps reminding me, we're supposed to be listening to you, not talking, and I'm always to blame for blabbing on, so will you discipline and hit me in upside the head if I interrupt you, please?
No, I'm learning a lot from you. I'm from Paradise, and I served on the Paradise Town Council. Paradise Irrigation District is currently trying to expand its district. It's trying to extend its permit to use more water from Butte Creek. And, of course, people that live along Butte Creek and the last best run of spring run Chinook salmon in the state, don't really want that to happen. And so... Paradise doesn't have enough water. We're not ready for drought, as it is. And same for Magalia. Same for all the growth they want down in the foothills. So we don't have excess water up here. I don't know how many times we have to tell you that. Now I work for Butte Environmental Council as an advocate, and we're challenging Butte County for not adequately considering water resources. Much of the growth is in the foothills that they're planning to do, and they don't know a darn thing about water in the foothills and the recharge, and, you know, there's no modeling. I went to a modeling water meeting recently, saw the various models, listened, and you guys don't know a darn thing either about our groundwater up here. And, you know a little bit, but it's not refined enough for this area. So it makes me really wonder how you're going to come up with an adequate environmental document by, what is it, November? You know, we need to use all of the best available science, but a lot of that science is not available. So how are you going to get this done by November?
We are going to do it as well as we can and as rapidly as we can.
I do appreciate your attempt to do it right this time, but I have a feeling that in the end there's going to be winners and losers. You know, you're asking us, well, how should people conserve? I think that the people that are wanting more water from here need to be the ones that figure it out. And I think there's not going to be any conservation by providing them more of our water. And I don't mean to be selfish here, our water, but the North State water is the water in our environment, in the environment here. It belongs in the environment here. And management, conjunctive management, should be local conjunctive management, not north-south conjunctive management. Really worried about the state water plan. The burden of proof. Maybe a mitigation measure should be that the burden of proof for harmful effects should be on the water transfer people, not on the people who are experiencing lower wells, having to pay for that, and then hydrologists too. That's ridiculous. We are overtapped. There's no vast underground network of water that can somehow magically be managed to produce new water. There's no new water. I keep reading that in the reports, that you're finding new water in your modeling. I don't think so. So the modeling data, as far as I can tell, and I'm pretty new to this still, is inadequate. And the modeling expert I talked to, you know, I asked him about, what is a confined aquifer? He said a confined aquifer, which is the lower aquifer, is defined by pressures. And originally, it could hold a positive pressure, and so that's, when we dug wells, they were artesian. And now there's negative pressure, which means they're trying to suck more water into them. That's a pretty good indication that there's not a vast underground, you know, supply of extra water. Mitigation definitely should include being who's accountable and enforcement. Needs to have an action plan here for those provisions. And I'm sure I'm missing something, but that's about it.
Thank you very much. Next speaker is Nora Tottinghagen.
Can I just clarify something? Just
Ms. Marcus.
I don't know if this is... this is the case. One of the challenges we have in this process is that we're doing a programmatic document at that level for the state. And believe me, I think I'll be stunned if we don't push water conservation, reclamation, all that to places you've never seen it go before in the state. I think the modeling you're probably talking about is the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, which is the separate facility plan, which is much more specific. And granular.
No, it was a statewide
It's statewide.
The whole valley, right. North and south, the biggest, I forget.
So it's more technical and localized than probably what we'll be doing in this particular plan.
Will there be project-level EIRs after this programmatic?
The answer is maybe. Part of our job and part of the scoping activity is to try to put some bones or some flesh on the bones of what this project environmental impact report and the Delta plan will look to. I think there will ultimately follow being project areas growing out of it. Whether the Stewardship Council does those or other agencies like Department of Fish and Game that they report to us on flow standards. They have to make recommendations on flow standards. They have all kinds of, including upstream mitigation, that directly relates to the work, and the statute says generically, if it benefits the Delta, we can talk about that kind of stuff. So we're trying to figure it out. They may wind up doing the programmatic EIRs, but it's hard to address that in the abstract because there's... You know, Butte County is going to have projects. Water districts are going to have projects. Glen Colusa Irrigation District is going to have. Everybody's going to have projects of one kind or another at every level simultaneously, and there's no one in charge of everything.
Yeah, it's kind of a divide and conquer is what it feels like. We're getting hit from every direction. You know, so many different groups. With different plans to use our water.
You know, we've got 5,000 or more governments in California, and we kind of like it, apparently. We keep forming them, you know, from reclamation districts and all the way up to cities and counties and one state. And it's the darndest thing trying to corral them all together and get a common position.
All right, well, we're here. You see
okay.
us.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Todenhagen, my apologies. Pull that down a little. Yes, thank you.
Pull it down. I don't want to squeak. Hello, my name is Nora Todenhagen, and I'd like to talk on a more general level here. The state of California is a democracy, and as a democracy, our politicians like to promise things. In California, they've promised water, and the water has been over-allocated. But any democracy is also set up to preserve minority populations. Sometimes, however, it doesn't preserve the minority populations very well. We had a very eloquent speech from the lady from the Hoopa tribe. Obviously, that minority population has not benefited from the democracy of California, from the over-allocation of water. We see ourselves here, I think you can tell this by the tone of our speakers, as another minority population. And we look to institutions to save us. We can't really look to politicians. They don't do such a very good job. But we do want to look at institutions. You folks represent the kind of institution that can help us. And for this reason, we're very glad you're here, but we're also very wary because we know that you are subject to a lot of influences too. And we're a small group. But we hope that what we represent, that is a sustainable agricultural area will influence you to make our voice heard in your discussions and consultations. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. James H. Townsend. Mr. Townsend. Wait a minute. Mr. Townsend, you told us the first time around that you didn't know anything about this. You know a lot about this.
Well, every time I look at this or hear someone speak, it just raises something else in me. And one of the first water meetings I went to, there were a group from the northern part of the state, and I happened to run across one of your maps of what the Delta watershed entails, and it takes it clear to the Oregon border. And some of the people that were there at that first water meeting, we got off into small groups, and they were telling about the things that were being done to them were unconscionable over their water rights and their land use. They were accusing one gentleman of his cows contaminating a school well with a bacterium that a cow doesn't even carry. And so they had to move his cows off of his land, and as far as I know, they're still off of that property. And they have proved that it come from the septic tank or the dry well that was at the school. And these kind of things and just injustice that happen that really ups, that get me, and quite a few at that meeting were upset also. But the main concern that I have is that the water will be transferred out of this area. But the thing that you need to maybe look at is there is a good supply of water for you. It's called an ocean, and desalinization plants would supply your need. In one of our worst droughts years back, there was a gentleman that did a study, and he said that he could supply them with water at $200 an acre foot for agriculture with the systems that they had then. Of course, this was back in the 70s. I have seen that there have been a lot of improvements made on our desalinization plants. That would solve your Delta problem and also address the protection of these non-native species fish. I think the Delta smelt, is that a native species? It is. Well, we're killing them by letting all this cold water out. It's depleting their food source. That is an algae that grows that they feed on. So that has caused the striped bass to feed on the salmon and steelhead fry that go down there instead of eating the Delta smelt. So if we turn this thing back the way it was and try to keep things more of in a natural flow rather than man's intervention, we may see that things work out a lot better for our environment, for our fish species, for the human species. And there was one suggestion that a gentleman made many years back, and everybody kind of laughed at him. If you're worried about the salt intrusion in the Delta, build ship locks in the Carquinez Straits.
The engineer named Mr. Reber, who proposed it for years, and there were like five
excellent
government
idea.
Studies. The Reber barrier. Yep. It eventually failed because nobody wanted to pay for it. But more importantly, fish can't get through when the barriers close, and it tends to create problems that way.
Well, there's fish ladders. They use them all over the world, and they work. But it wasn't in the plan of things, and they didn't want to do that, or it right. cost too much money.
Right.
They don't have a problem with wanting to set up a $11.2 billion bond to improve our reservoirs up here, to improve our water system, to double the amount of water that they're going to run south. Build the desalinization plants. It would solve a lot of problems.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. Mr. Brad Mattson. Mr. Mattson from the Richville Irrigation District. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. I just had two comments about on page 23 of your NOP.
23?
Yes. On the fourth bullet down, you say, consider expanding in practice and or legislation the ability to use eminent domain procedures to further policy objectives of the Act.
Yes.
Last time I checked, a water right was a private property right. Would you consider using eminent domain to look into acquiring private property rights such as water rights? Is that something that's
The water now code now permits the state of California to exercise eminent domain. They don't use it very often, but it permits it.
Okay. And the next thing, I'm sure all of us know the state's broke.
Which page you're looking at now?
What was that? Still on page 24, at the top of page 24, the next bullet. It says, consider a financing plan that could be based upon fees and charges to fund implementation of the Delta plan. Mm-hmm. A lot of people up here use water, and we don't feel that we should be charged a fee to pay for somebody else's problem. Under the colloquial goals here, we have a reliable supply of water up here. We don't need somebody taking our water and giving it to somebody else to make it reliable for them.
Okay.
So we need to save our water. I agree we need to protect the ecosystem, but we have an ecosystem here to protect as well. So that okay. was my comments. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's the last of the blue slips we have. Is there anyone who'd like to talk on things not related to the NOP? Hopefully not the same speeches over again, but new comments. Anyway, yes, sir. If you could grab the mic and again identify yourself and go from there. Please.
All right. My name is Mark Herrera, M-A-R-K-H-E-R-R-E-R-A. Thank you again for having us tonight, and thank you for hearing our input. Tonight, we are here to figure out how to balance one ecosystem's water needs, and this will come at the cost of this local watershed. Some of the costs that already exist to provide water needs to other ecosystems and humans include the dam at Hetch Hetchy, the loss of Tulare Lake, and the drop of soil levels in the San Joaquin Valley. I'm sure photos of these places just missed the cut in this pretty booklet. If your plan works, you will be able to take pictures of the dead oaks and sycamores dependent on the aquifer and declining rivers absent of salmon runs that once overflowed its banks. Oh, and you'll be thirsty, too. There's a lot of talk about California's water supply and its statewide interconnected water systems. This Delta plan sounds great, but that is because you have compartmentalized different ecosystems. I want nothing more than a healthy Delta ecosystem, but not at the cost of the one we live in here. Your booklet says, for decades, California has been using more water than nature provides. So tonight, we are here to talk about exporting more water than is naturally exported. This does not make sense. I hope that you understand that all I want is all ecosystems to be healthy and viable. So I have one suggestion. If you want more water to flow through the Delta, to flow through to the Delta, water that would naturally be flowing through it, I suggest that instead of sucking it out from underneath us, start removing dams. Start tomorrow. It's no wonder that the natural ecosystem is off balance because of dams. Dams are not natural. Yes, beavers exist, and one might suggest that their dam is natural. Well, the only difference between us and a beaver is that a beaver knows when to stop. And I'm asking you to stop and stop the destruction that we have going on. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Herrera. Okay, anyone else? Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for... Oh, yes, sir, I'm sorry. Excuse me, I didn't see you over there. Could you get to that mic before you say something?
James Townsend, Oroville, California, resident.
Yes, sir.
A comment on a comment. You made a comment about water rights in Butte County. The transfer of water, my understanding of Butte County, the county supervisors cannot transfer that water that they're allotted from the Lake of Oroville. There are also a problem between used to be...
complicated again, supervising...
Well, it used to be OWID, which is now South Feather River. Power and Electricity bought the water district in Yuba County. They were transferring water into Yuba County illegally. It was stopped. They own both water companies. They also own the ditches to the line of the county and the ditches on the other side, which are connected, which doesn't make any sense, but it is lawful. You cannot transfer water from Butte County. The only ones that can are federally funded and backed up by the state, which is called DWR, that gave rights for water in Butte County when they built the Lake Oroville, which is now considered a reservoir. And to just to clarify that part, but backing up, one thing that I skipped, one of your comments were about raising hay. Hay has been attacked by, what is it, the Irrigated Land Regulatory Program, like I was saying, being squeezed. Maybe to explain to the rest of you, I imagine you do eat hamburgers on the 4th of July, at least if you do eat meat at all. A water line, a hand line, does not pay for itself in its lifetime. There's nothing much of a hand line, which is just a piece of aluminum pipe with a riser and a sprinkler on it to wear out, to sort of give you an idea. If you have a wheel line, that's easier to move. You got a larger piece of ground. If you're more productive, is more economically damaging to you as far as the cost, but it never pays for itself either. You've all seen pivots coming into our state too, which used to never exist in California. And I've worked in Nevada, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, managing ranches for large corporations, okay? Those are such an upkeep that they are devastating. And so we're back to the irrigated land regulatory program that you stated about raising hay. You're not outlawing the raising of hay.
I did. But I was trying to answer the question of why not apply the rule that they're not using the water beneficially, suggested by one of the people. Right. And I said, there is a long history of legal questions about whether or not you can say you have to use the water for the highest possible use. And the courts have generally said, as I understand it, that as long as it's beneficial use, you can use it. The more clear is, if you're using your water in a way that damages someone else, then the courts tend to step in. But if you have particularly a riparian right to use water from a stream that you're adjacent to, if you're using it beneficially, nobody's yet proposed to step in and change that I've ever heard.
Yes, they
are. Now, some people have advocated it. But I don't know of no regulatory agency that's...
They have, and it's there's so many regulations that are coming in from different organizations that it's unbelievable. Right here in Butte County, on the Feather River, fishing there, I've seen all kinds of pumps removed that used to irrigate those dairies that existed that turned into orchards.
And that's because they probably did not have the right permits.
Yes, they have water. They have water rights, and those water rights are revoked because you have waters that are more permittable to use, which cannot get across Highway 70. So it's impossible. Okay. So when you get into the water, like I'm trying to explain to you, being squeezed from more directions than you understand. My wife's cousin, Mr. Hare, when your first meeting was, you had a cost regulatorial to our, the cost effect of using the water more correctly and less squandering the water or letting the water run off into a dry ditch. The fact of it is, that's the third richest cotton grower in the United States. He was here in California. 68% when we met last year, I believe it's at the inn over here off of 70, or 99, pardon me, and Mangrove, you stated that a few things about regulatory water use and the cost effectiveness, but yet you didn't even know who this man was that left 65% of his cotton that he raised here in the San Joaquin, he took to India. Right now, if you watch the news, cotton is going to triple for us. So in essence, what was said before, you can grow hay up here cheaper than you can grow it in the San Joaquin. You start regulating the amount of use of water and how we irrigate it, the price runs up, pushes it up to the point that you can't buy hay. Right now, it's up to $16 a bale. We're talking about a 100-pound bale. If you have any idea, a 40 pounds is what a horse eats of it. Cattle eat half of that, 20 pounds a day, to just sustain their weight, not to gain weight as feeders to go to slaughter for you to eat on the 4th of July. So the point that I'm trying to make is the regulatory groups that are coming up are trying to conserve this water so you can have it south is getting to the point that you're pushing the agriculture out of our northern state. And that's what I was trying to say prior and kind of skip the pressures that we were receiving. Just like the gentleman, my dad stood up and said about a fellow that was removed from his 4,300 acres that he pays taxes on. His cattle are still not on his 4,300 acres. He's paying to utilize someone else's property because he was negligently attacked by the irrigated land regulatory program that his cattle were polluting the well on that school grounds 14 miles southeast of Red Bluff. He's a veterinarian. He proved himself that didn't exist in his animals and that it was from the septic tank, not the irrigated land regulatory program that kicked him off of his land. You understand what I'm saying? Another thing is, a lot of you might not know, Big Brother is supposed to take care of us, is what we're getting shoved down our throat here. Big Brother did not build this country, nor did he start this, what we have going on in the agriculture of Northern California. But you are squashing it. And what I mean by that is you price us out of water, we can't use it. And you're already pricing me out of water right here in Palermo and in Bangor, where I irrigate. And the ditch runs through the property. It's not the lack of the ability of getting water to my property that I lease. But as a shoestring outfit, these gentlemen that had dairies on the river cannot receive water from the river any longer, but they're supposed to get it from South Feather River Power Irrigation that can't get the water to them. There's no way to get it there. So you look at these laws, you look at these things that you say is very sensible, but you don't see it for what it actually is. There is no way that they can, well, let's back up a little bit. Human use of water alone. South Feather River Power Irrigation District cannot filtration water. So people today, above Orville, outside the city limits, are drinking open ditch water, which is illegal in the state, according to human resources of the state of California, correct? But yet you have an irrigation district that's putting water pressurizing in a pipe. I've got a mule and three horses crapping in the cotton picking line because they won't fence it. So when you get to laws, yeah, they make things very clear and easy. But when you get to what it costs, no, it's not. And the water can't get there if there's not a pipe or a transfer to put it there. And who's going to pay for it? These taxpayers? Somebody's going to have to pay for it because the food is going to become unreasonably affordable. Just like the cotton is going to be in a matter of next year, actually, if not the end of this year. So when you start looking and talking about what you've got in science, like this lady stated earlier, and the lack of water in paradise, you don't realize what you're going to do the economy of this county, let alone this state. You're talking about the sixth richest origin in the world right here, and that is agriculture. And if you devastate this state, you right now are getting paid for this and looking forward to getting paid later for the conservation of this delta, correct? There won't be any money, people, for you to receive. Because the state, like my dad and a few other people have said, it's going to dry up. Pardon the pun? No, the money is not going to be there because there's nothing going to be here as far as agriculture to pay the taxes. Which, if without tax money, how are you going to receive a paycheck? How are these people going to eat? Right now, the dairyman is, you folks pay to have your trash hauled off. The dairymen in this state are paying to have their milk hauled off for you to drink. They're not getting paid what it costs them to produce the milk. So if you don't believe it, look at it yourself. And you don't have to look on the internet. Go to a dairyman and get the paperwork right in front of your face of it, because he's already had to hand this over to the Irrigated Land Water District or Regulatory District. They come in and they've run them through. And the reason you don't see farmers, dairymen, and people here, 38% of the dairymen already left this state. This used to be the highest production of milk in the United States was right here in California. A lot of them have moved from the southern part of the state to here. You know, 38% of them left the state and went to Idaho because there's no regulations in Idaho. We are not the highest producing milk state in the United States of America any longer. And that is because what you're talking about and the diversion and transferring of this water has already happened. So the point that I'm trying to get is, you're working yourself out of a job, just like the forestry did running the cattle out of Butte County and Plumas County forest. Those men didn't realize they were working themselves out of a job. You don't need somebody up there running around in empty woods. Their jobs are done away with. So please, don't take our economy and crash it. And don't take our economic and our ecosystem and smash it, just like it's been said over and over. But what you're going to do is you're going to take food out of people's mouth, and it's already been pressed what the laws have been passed 3 years ago, folks. These people are talking about mitigating it. The laws had already been passed. And they'd have tossed these dairymen hundreds of thousands of dollars to put a concrete barrier on their catch ponds. And they found that those barriers didn't help. Actually, the pollution that it was supposed to stop tripled. And the dairies are dried up and gone, the ones I'm speaking of. So they know it's not the dairy any longer that's causing that pollution. So somehow, somewhere, this cow urine and crap was doing something to better the environment of the pollution that you're speaking of. Another thing is, do you realize that they've taken phosphate out of your soap? And isn't that true, sir? Because of the pollution to the Delta? Yeah, you better wash your dishes before you stick them in your dishwasher, because that phosphate used to remove the bacteria on those plates. But don't worry about eating out, because as far as the restaurants, if my understanding is, you didn't push that regulation on them, but just on us and our households. But what you're working at, and the folks here in this room and everybody needs to realize, you're going to remove, is just like you said in your comment to the regulatory that you have in your paperwork here, of the event of removing proper private property. As landowners, you own mineral rights, if you do own your mineral rights. Most of us don't, but you have the right to that water. If you come in, you have the right to take that water out from underneath your land and dry up your aquifers, like we're talking about. You're going to collapse our soil. Those aquifers will not be able to be returned. But you're talking about the ecosystem of the Delta. And like it's already been said here, and all I am is bringing all everything that's been said already, is if you crash this, your Delta is going to suffer. It's already been stated by these other people here. You're going to ruin the whole ordeal. It's not going to be sustainable down there in the Delta if you crash our water system here. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay. All right. Last request. Anybody want to say anything? I want to thank you very much for coming out. It's been terrific. Appreciate it. Written comments are very much appreciated. Anytime between now and, you know, just whenever, just address them to the website. They'll be posted immediately. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.